On today's episode, we're speaking with Dhiren Harchandani. Dhiren is a transformational coach based in Dubai who has a unique talent for simplifying complex ideas and making them accessible to anyone. Dhiren's life has not always been smooth sailing. He has faced difficult circumstances as a child and later on has also made tough choices that did lead him to rock bottom. He refused to let those challenges define him. Instead, he used them as an opportunity for growth and for self-improvement. Through this journey, he's discovered the power of the mind and how anyone can use simple tactics to transform their lives. Today, Dhiren is a beacon of light for those seeking to become their best selves. He coaches leaders and individuals on how to unleash their full potential and achieve their goals. His approach is grounded in his personal experience and his deep understanding of the human psyche. Welcome to the Fail Forward Podcast, where Dan and Adnan peel back the onion on our guest stories and on each other, all in an effort to change the narrative of failure. Enjoy the show. This podcast is sponsored by Sport Firma. Sport Firma is a brand new e-store of endurance sports nutrition in the UAE. They know exactly how to boost your performance and aid your recovery. Sport Firma will provide you with an effective nutrition plan for either your major race or for your daily routine. You can find them online at sportfirma.ae or at sportfirmadxp on Instagram. On with the show. Welcome back to the Fail Forward Podcast with Adnan and Dan. Today we have the honor and the pleasure of having Dhiren on the podcast with us. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you for having me.
Dhiren, we had a really heartfelt conversation last week when we first chatted about this opportunity, time we could spend together. Yes. And I learned that you have been through the full gamut or spectrum of life experiences when you think of the lowest of the lows to the highest of the highs. But what's unique about some of the things you've been through is that you've been at points where the average world would look at you as being the highest of the highs, but you actually felt at the lowest of lows.
Rock bottom.
Now, you're using some of that experience to help others do the same, to find those moments where they don't feel internally as good as they should or as the world thinks they are, and help them create that alignment, right? We were talking about alignment between left and right brain, but it applies to alignment between the internal and external as well. So we can take this in any direction, but I'd love to kind of pass the ball off to you and just tell us a little bit about how your life began, some of the key milestones, and how those obstacles and what some may consider not necessarily your failures, but challenges as you've been through have kind of shaped your principles and the philosophies of your life.
There's a lot to unpack there. So my life began 4 decades ago, but I really only woke up several years ago. And I say that I woke up several years ago because I had a coach that I was working with, and he asked me, "What are your limiting beliefs?" And I said, "Me? It was at that point in my life where I was riding high. Anyone from the outside looking in would say, successful. Check, 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 sports car. You know, all the things that we would define in the traditional sense as a reflection of success. Checked all the boxes. And so I said, I don't have any limiting beliefs. Well, what are limiting beliefs? And he chuckled and he's like, "I'll see you in day two," the next day. The next day he asked me again, he said, "So what are your limiting beliefs?" I said, "I don't have any." Then he took me through an intervention called time paradigm. It's an intervention used in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. And he took me to when I was one. And I could see myself moving from my parents. I've never told this story before. Moving from who my parents were to these two other people. And from there on, I lived with these two other people for many years. I wasn't aware of it. And I'm seeing this in high definition as he took me through this intervention. And several years after having lived with who turned out to be my aunt and uncle, they had basically, there's this belief in Eastern culture that when two people can't conceive, if you put a child in between in the equation, love starts flowing and, you know, it increases the probability of conception. Mm-hmm. And so they did not have any children. I was put in the equation, and a few years later, they conceived. And I'm seeing myself in this scene in the time paradigm, and I see myself wearing my best outfit. You know, as kids, we have our best outfits. I was wearing my best outfit as a five-year-old. And it was that day that, and at the same time, I heard a cry. So they had finally conceived. And it was the same day that I was then moved back to live with my biological parents, as I was adopting my aunt and uncle as my biological parents. I then moved back to my real parents. And then I came out of it, and he asked me, what are your limiting beliefs now? And I wrote 27 limiting beliefs down. 27. The main ones were, I don't belong. I don't deserve love. I will be abandoned. And then I started analyzing my life, right? As someone in their 40s, I'm looking at my life, and with this realization of these limiting beliefs, I'm now looking at it from that lens, and I realized that all these patterns were recurring patterns in my life that was caused by that one experience. Now, I have a phenomenal relationship with my parents. I speak to them every single day, right? I have fond memories of my childhood, but this was something that I was not aware of. Consciously, I knew it happened, but I had no awareness of the subconscious imprint and influence that that experience was having in my adult life. So it defined how I got bullied in school. It defined how I was not able to connect, or I would sabotage certain relationships before I would be abandoned. So it was like this, peripheral threat, mechanism of always scanning for danger and making sure that I always protected myself. Because one of the prime directives of the subconscious mind is to always protect itself.
Defense mode.
Yeah. I was in defense mode for many years. And so I came out of that woke. And I don't even really know what that means anymore, but I was awakened by that experience. It revealed to me all these patterns that I was living with. And that's when I really felt like I started living. Like, up to that point, I wasn't comfortable. I was uneasy. Now, reflecting back, now that I know what authenticity feels like, I can say that. But back then, I didn't know any better.
Wow.
Thank you for sharing that, first off, because I felt that journey like I was there with you. You wouldn't have known any different at that age.
No.
That was just the way life was. But man, you must be grateful for that conversation to have gone back and revisited that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I came out of that, and the first person I called was my mom. And I told her, I said, are you aware of this, that this happened? She said, of course I'm aware of it. And she has this ability. My mom is someone who has this, her superpower is the ability to see the silver lining in every situation. Within 5 seconds, she sees the silver lining, and she reframed it for me. She said, if it wasn't for you, they would not have a family that they have today, right? You were the enabler. You were the catalyst. But I said, but that's not how I experienced it, right? I said, yeah, in hindsight now, but, I could have avoided so much pain and suffering and self-doubt along the way. But that's my journey. We all have something that happened to us in our childhood that some of us are aware of it, some of us are not. And my mission now is to, when I, you know, when we were doing the mic test, I said 1 billion, 2 billion. And, you know, I said it in jest, but my mission is to touch and transform a part of the lives of a billion people by sharing that vulnerability. You can be vulnerable, and in that space, you discover parts of you that may be holding you back. Yeah.
The reason I was smiling is because
I felt it. Yeah.
Was about a year ago when we initially got the idea for the podcast. The crazy idea that Dan brought up was that I want to affect a billion people. So it's great to see that we're operating with that same insane but positive mindset.
It's insane. It's absolute. I mean, if we had this conversation a month ago, you would hear cracks in my voice when I said 1 billion. Like, you know, there was this part of me that would say, really? A billion people? Come on. A billion people, Darren? Who are you? Right?
Yeah.
But as I reconciled and meditate on it and start really thinking about the action, okay, it's one thing to put it out there. Intention is powerful, right? But what are the steps? And as I started taking steps, I started really owning it. So, Dan, for us, it's 1 and 1, so we're going for 2 billion, right?
It's going to happen. Facebook, they've managed to reach 1.97 billion through creating a social media account that just brings people together. And that's just the start. I think, you know, my goal is to achieve that in 20 years. I don't know. Mm. You just find the actionable steps that make that happen.
Absolutely.
But I think if you believe it, then yeah, why not?
Yeah, it really comes down to the belief, right? One of my quotes is self-belief is not negotiable. Like, you have to believe in yourself. That's key. And it's trite. Right? Everyone says it's self-belief. You've got to believe in yourself. It's true. It's trite, but it's trite for a reason. It's because there's so much depth and power in believing in yourself, because mindset is an unfair advantage. Not everyone has it, right? Mm-hmm. It's the ultimate sustainable competitive advantage. Everything in, you know, I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs as a serial entrepreneur myself, and, you know, I tell entrepreneurs that, and this is something that I learned, is that, you know, the competitive advantage in your business is not going to come from something that you learned from a master class or business school, even if it's HBS or one of the top business schools in the world, or, you know, a podcast. It's not going to come from any of these platforms. It's going to come from your belief in yourself. It's the only sustainable competitive advantage that we have.
So I want to go back to the topic around the 27 limiting beliefs you mentioned. I and Dan, and I'm sure many others, are to a certain extent aware of the things that hold them back. Let's say it's insecurity. Let's say it's I'm afraid of how I look. Let's say I have a tough relationship with my parents and that bleeds into my relationships with others. The harder challenge is being able to quell those beliefs, transform them, change them, and hopefully for the long run. And personally, I've always struggled with whether it's a aha moment or an epiphany that does that, or if it's a slow, gradual routine. And with different areas of my life, I've seen some come about through, you know, channel one, and some come about through channel two. Talk me through your experience of how you were able to move from awareness of a limiting belief to actually transforming it.
Great question. So there are two reasons why people change. There are many, but the top two that I've come across and experienced myself, the first is they're just sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, I'm done with this. You know, I'm on the edge, and either I change or I fall. The second reason is because people have seen a vision. They've seen a vision of what they want. Now they know exactly what they want. And to get that, they need to make certain changes, right? And so for me, with certain beliefs, I was coming from the sick and tired of being sick and tired. As soon as it was revealed to me that I had these 27 limiting beliefs, and, you know, yes, there was success, but at what cost? I was tired. I said to myself that I need to work on this. Now, there are certain interventions that have the ability to dissolve the limiting belief instantly. And when I say instantly, I mean instantly. Because what happens is, with these interventions, is you go to the root of the problem, right? You're going to the root of it. And by going to the root, there's, when you look at our timeline, there's a moment in time where a belief was formed. Something happened. Either we heard our grandmother say, everyone in our family has poor bones, for example, right? Or everyone in our family, or everyone from this ethnicity will have these kind of challenges, right? You hear it in passing, TV, family, friends, teacher, and now that belief is planted. It's seeded into your subconscious. And one of the prime directives of the subconscious mind is to prove itself right. And now you're going to look for evidence to prove that belief. So it gets deeper and deeper and deeper. So in these interventions, you get to the root of what's causing it or when it was formed, and we recode it. We recode it with a more empowering belief. All it is it's code. Mm-hmm. It's code in our, etched into our consciousness, or etched into our subconscious, into our psyche. And so that's one way. The second way is a lot longer, you know, drawn out in terms of reading the books. And this is the thing about the self-help revolution, right? It's a multi-billion dollar industry, and they've figured out that as long as they keep pumping the books out, the workshops, the podcasts, the masterclasses, you're going to keep buying it again and again and again, right? But most people don't change. Most people that read the books are not going to change because they're not getting to the root of it. And even if they are changed, have you seen that image where there's a guy basically, you know, mining for gold, and he's about to strike gold. It's there. It's one layer beneath where he is, and he walks away, right?
Yeah.
That's what happens with the long, drawn-out approach, is that we get frustrated when we don't see results. And we live in this instant, you know, culture wherein we want everything at once, right?
Instant gratification.
Instant gratification, exactly. And you can get instant gratification as long as you go through, you know, a very structured approach that is led by someone who knows exactly how to recode those thoughts, who guide you along the way.
Have you read a book called Diary, The Code of the Extraordinary Mind by Vishen
Lakhiani?
Yes.
I have.
As soon as you were talking about code, I was thinking about the whole concept of upgrading your hardware and your software. And if you assume the analogy that your body is either a machine or a vehicle, it becomes very easy to understand that let me just find the OS and make the necessary code adjustments so that every subsequent system that's directed by that OS changes accordingly. Mm. I actually want to delve into the concept you mentioned about, you know, the fault or the circular system of this self-help industry. Can you talk to me more about what makes people come to the motivational videos, the podcasts, but maybe not ultimately change their code?
So that's a controversial question.
We're on a podcast. We're running a podcast. Like, let's, and we both are podcasters. So I think let's actually play devil's advocate on what we're doing. That's my goal here, and see, yeah. you know, where I don't necessarily know if either of our goals are to use the podcast as a tool alone to help people change their lives, but it's important for us to at least recognize that what our channel of communication is, but also what it isn't, right?
Absolutely. So behavioral sciences show that at any point in time in our life, majority of people, so if you just look at your circle of friends and acquaintances, majority of them, over 90%, will have a change that they're trying to make at any given point in time. Now, what is a change? Let's break that, let's define it further. It's going to be a habit that they're either trying to break or a habit that that they're trying to adopt. Now, the question is, well, why is that? Why is majority of people either trying to break a habit or adopt a habit? And the answer is simple. The answer is that at any given point in time, you'll have a habit you're either trying to break or adopt because you have anywhere between 15 to 20 problems in your life at any given point in time. And majority of those problems are caused by that one habit. So some of these problems you're conscious of, some of them you're not. Some are major problems, some are subtle. But a majority of them are caused by this one habit. And so we're walking around, most people are walking around knowing that, you know, my sleep just isn't as good as it can be. Or I'm not connecting with my spouse to the depth that I can. That's a problem, right? Or an opportunity. I'm not connecting with my kids. Or I'm not able to take my business to the next level. Or why is my podcast not growing in terms of listeners? It's a problem. There's something that's chipping away at, you know, or something whispering, saying there's something wrong, right? And so I think that's the reason people are drawn to motivation, change, self-help, because everyone has this innate intention that, or an innate intention to be a better version of themselves. Again, trite, but, you know, to access their next level, right? And so that's the draw. So for me, that one habit that I was trying to break that was causing 17 problems was my relationship with alcohol. For a long time, I started drinking at a very young age.
And how young?
I was about 15. I grew up in Southeast Asia, and it was normal. It was, you know, all my friends were consuming.
I was 11.
Okay.
That's why I asked. I just wanted.
Yeah. Okay. Not as young as 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, Dan, my son's 13. I can't even wrap my mind around that.
I didn't look 11 either. So okay. Imagine anyone that was walking around that probably saw me. But this was an experience. This wasn't a progressive thing. But I'm quite open to talk about it. That, yeah, I was drinking alcohol at 11 years old.
Why?
I think it was... I don't think ego existed when I was 11. I don't know if I... But for me, it was maybe an escapism.
Was it your environment? Were the friends around you?
Definitely environment. Yeah, it was around the people I was hanging around, I think. And there was probably some form of bullying within that kind of circle as well. So So I had to prove something as well. But after that experience when I was 11, I didn't touch a drop of alcohol until I was 15 or 16, perhaps. So there was a gap. My dad was a policeman, and I was worried sick to think what he Fear. How I would be treated after that incident. He never said a word. Never said a word. And I asked my mum, why, you know, I was grounded. My mum was going berserk. And that's a story for another day, but she said he knew you'd learn your lesson. I did. That journey of alcohol for me is possibly similar to yours. So yeah.
For me, it was my need to fit in. It was my need to connect. It was the tool that would allow me to connect. Like, I wanted to be part of the group, the tribe, right? So, and so as I started getting deeply entrenched in my social circle, you know, things started working. I started getting attention. I started growing my friends group. But going back to your question, when I realized that this was causing 17 problems, and the problems were, lack of focus to, impacting my immunity, I would see my mood swing, right, up and down. And then, I got introduced to this tool, which basically, libraries can be filled with books on how to break a habit and how to change. But one of the most powerful tools that I've come across is being really, really clear on what the habit is as the first step. And the second step is being clear on what the side effects are. What are the side effects that's causing or that's being caused by this one habit? And the third step is then now saying, okay, what is the cost? What is this costing me in terms of, monetary cost, indirect cost that can't even be measured, right? And I did the math, and the number was staggering. It was absolutely shocking. Because, when I would consume alcohol the next day, not just the next day, but at least for 2 days, I wasn't myself. So the productivity hit on my business and my health, the impact on the business could be quantified, but the impact on my health couldn't, mm-hmm. right? So I was using it as a coping mechanism. And once I discovered that this was tied together, that gave me the willpower to slowly working on chipping away at that habit. Yeah. So again, it's going to the root.
Yeah. What resonated even more with me is the concept of specifying the habit and then specifying all the consequences of it. Mm. Because as you were talking, it's so ambiguous. When you're trying to quit a habit, there are moments where you feel the urge to do it again or get back to it. But when you have a monetary, a relationship E, and maybe a business E, cost very articulately defined and potentially even projected out multiple years into the future to see, this is the durian I'm going to be in 5 years from a monetary relationship and business point of view. If I keep doing this, it becomes so easy for your brain to then say, no, we don't need to do this.
Yeah.
And I think like literally having SMART, SMART goals for removing your habit from your life.
Yeah. And it's tough. It's tough because, when I stopped, my circle of friends shrunk. My phone stopped ringing. I found out who my friends were. But my vision got larger. But it was painful. It was tough. It was really, really tough. I was in my 30s when this happened. I mean, now if anyone who, when I look at my circle of friends, if there's anyone that, stops drinking or breaks that habit, everyone's like, yeah, good job. Like, good on you. Like, we're supportive. But in your 30s, everyone's like, why are you doing that? Like, that's weird. Like, he's gone off the rails, right? Yeah. And it's a totally different reaction, in the 30s versus in the 40s. And now I look back, I want to make sure that this comes across in a very humble way. It's a very humbling thing that the same people who stopped calling are actually now calling me, saying, hey, how did you do that? Tell me the steps, because, I think this is causing a problem in my life. Now, this is not for everyone, right? There's some people who enjoy it and can control it. And maybe the impact, the direct and indirect impact to their lives are limited. Great. But for me, It got to a point where it was causing chaos. Mm-hmm.
Do you think you've influenced a lot of people based on your actions without knowing it as well?
Absolutely. Without knowing it. So I have, coincidentally, I have someone took a photo of me having my last drink. It's on my social media page. And I put it up a few years ago. And I got a message from someone I didn't know, random person. I have a public profile. It's open. And so someone basically saw that and messaged me and said, hey, you know, I've been trying to do this. I haven't been able to figure it out. Can you walk me through the how, the steps? On message, DM, back and forth, over 2 weeks. And then he vanishes for 4 months. Didn't hear from him for 4 months. 4 months later, messages me saying, I just want you to know I've been dry for 4 months. And I have been able to, my relationship with my family wasn't where it could have been, and now it's really, really strong. And that, you know, when I got that message, it's actually in my book, because it had such a profound impact on, and it really fueled my conviction to be open, transparent, and vulnerable, irrespective of what other people say. Like, for a while, I remember I used to think, you know, would people care if I talk about this? Would people feel like I feel like because I've done this, people who haven't are, you know, is it binary? Is it, okay, right and wrong? But so I had to get over a lot of that self-doubt and narrative. I had to rewrite the narrative that, you know, this is my journey, right? I have to own it. This is what I went through, and this has brought me to where I am today, that clarity, that focus. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I hope that answers your question.
How do you feel now? Or I'm going to change the question.
Yeah.
How are you?
How am I? Today?
Just in general.
In general, I'm blessed. I feel I'm in a really good space in terms of my mind. To me, I equate happiness to having a calm mind. If you have a calm mind, like, you know, we all want financial freedom. You know, a million listeners on our podcast, or in your case, a billion humans, right? We all want these things, right? A bigger business, a six-pack, a circle of friends that are supportive, healthy family. But the access point to all of that is outer game, right? The access point to all of that is having a high level of self-awareness, right? Why do you want those things? Is it for you or is it for something? So I feel, to answer your question, I feel like I'm in that space or stage in my life where I'm clear on what I want. Now, the rabbit hole is deep, right? How deep do you want to go? So as we move forward and our dreams and our ambitions get larger, we discover even more beliefs that we weren't aware of, right? So to answer your question, today, these days, I'm good. I feel I'm blessed. I'm really blessed to have come across and come in contact with people who have really supported and helped me in my journey. And the fact that I've been able to do that for others is a real privilege. Hmm.
The point about being blessed, I'm not sure if this is a question or more of a statement, but I see the heartfeltness of the way you said blessed, and I can't help but assume it's because of the fact that you know how lows the low can get. And while a given day may not hold the biggest accomplishment in relation to your goals and desires, simply not drinking or not having a fight with your significant other or someone you care about means that it was a great day. Mm. Because you know what those really bad days are like, and you know those were the norms before. Mm. How often does that thought consciously or subconsciously stay in the back of your mind to know that this is what baseline was for so long, that the baseline now itself is paradise for me?
Yeah, that's a great question. The lows are so far in the past that I don't think about it as much as I used to. I feel like that was such a different person. Like, I don't even relate or connect to that version anymore because it happened what feels like a very long time ago. But having said that, there's still lows, right? There have been recent lows. There have been betrayals that really put you to the test. But what I've realized is that what really puts us to the test is this sense of uncertainty, right? This notion of what's going to happen, right? Because beneath I'm not going to be successful, beneath I'm not good enough, beneath I'm, you know, not going to be able to take my podcast, my business, my relationships to the next level, beneath all of that narrative is uncertainty, right? We actually don't know. So what's driving it is the language that we're using. It's just words. If I were to tell you that, Dan, you're gonna touch the lives of 1 billion people, you are going to get everything you want. You are going to have an amazing, fulfilling life and legacy. How do you feel now? How does that feel?
It feels good.
But all I did was change the words.
Yeah.
Right? I just used a different... I used different language.
What you said is you're putting it into you are this person already. That's how I kind of visioned it. Oh, sort of imagined it, sorry. That's not the right word, visioned it.
Yeah, I mean, embodying who you want to be, right? You know, in NLP, they talk about how, you know, your thoughts lead to your behavior, and your behavior leads to your action. And action then drives your results. So your thoughts, your behavior, and your action are all inner game. It's all inside you, right? And then it pops out. The result is outer game, right? Mm-hmm. But everything driving the result actually was created inside you, right? So to answer your question, yes, I do remember the lows, but I try not to focus on what I'm trying to avoid. I try to focus on what I want.
Sounds like you're in the present.
Yeah, I mean, not always. I mean, it. Look, every day is a challenge, right? Every day is definitely, it's different. And that's the goal. It's just trying to be as present as possible. Because if at the, you know, let me ask you this, Adnan. Do you think your thoughts create your reality?
100%.
Do you believe it at the gut level?
Pretty close to it, yes.
Beautiful. So if everyone believed that at the gut level, right, would you ever let any thought that doesn't serve you, that doesn't empower you, would you let any of those thoughts slip by?
No.
No, because it's going to create the reality you don't want, yeah. Right?
But the question is, I think those questions are very valid, and I, minus the gut part, I think most people would agree that I don't want to have thoughts that don't cater to my reality in my mind. Mm. But the challenge is always, is everybody well-equipped, me included, to have the right fencing, the right TSA at the gates. Mm. And that's the biggest challenge, because there are, regardless of the fact that I believe that my thoughts create my reality, right, my gut, sometimes my TSA is off duty and those thoughts allow themselves in. Mm. And then regardless if I know, like, okay, I know the thoughts create my reality, but now this thought is in, and then now it has the ability to affect the reality that I'm working towards.
So the point is, in those moments where, you know, TSA is not on duty, I love that analogy, by the way, and thoughts are coming in, as long as you're aware of it, right? You're aware of it, now you've gone meta. You've mm-hmm. basically, you've become the observer, right, of the thoughts, right? Yeah. So you're just watching it go by. You don't have to subscribe to the notification, right? It's happening. TSA, off duty, this is going to come in. It's okay. I'm in debugging mode. I'm watching the thoughts go by. This is good. This isn't good. Why is this happening? What could be driving this thought, for example, right? And that's what I meant by, you know, every day is different. Sometimes TSA is off duty, right? Boundaries are compromised. You never get to a point where you've changed. You're always in a state of transformation, right? You're constantly changing. That's why this whole notion of authenticity is like, you know, I think it's a conversation that we need to stop having. Controversial. We need to stop having this conversation of be more authentic. Authentic to who? To who I am today? But, you know, who I am today is not going to be the same person I'm going to be in a week or a month from now. So as long as I'm being authentic to who I want to be, right, or who I'm embodying into the future, that's authenticity, or that's just being aligned with what you want.
Oh, that's a powerful phrase. I think, yeah, looking at it that way, your authentic self isn't viewed as something that's... I don't know how to come back on that.
I mean, I'm just thinking about... It's harder... Okay, one second. Testing. Great. Being authentic to who you want to be changes as well, but you have a significantly more calculated control and intentional control over that. And in a very tangible or tactical way, it can be as simple as writing down a set of values or principles that align with who you want to be. And over time, as you transform the today, the tomorrow, the day after you, that over time will transform, so you have a more calculated form of authenticity. Is not the right way to put it, but you have a clearer target of what authentic means.
Mm. Yeah.
Versus, I feel this, I'm going to be this.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel sad. Well, I guess being negative right now is authentic to me.
And that's okay.
Maybe that is.
Yeah.
But having the target of, hey, I'm a person who always sees the silver lining in any experience, that may bring out a different response on a given day when you're sad.
Mm. And that's okay.
Yeah, and it's also okay to be sad if that's...
It's okay.
If you're a person that believes that, hey, I will be vulnerable... And I'll share with the world how I'm feeling, right?
Yeah, to me, vulnerability is not being sad, right? For me, vulnerability is being confident in showing what hasn't worked. Mm. Showing that, you know what, I've got challenges. And knowing that you may be judged anyway, right? But still doing it. Like, mm-hmm. that's vulnerability. And you know, so to me, that's the distinction between And being sad is just having that emotion, and that's okay. The reason it's okay is because you look at any adult development framework from, you know, the hierarchy of needs of Myers-Briggs or spiral dynamics, it shows that, you know, when we go through these really challenging times in our lives, right, brings really heavy, challenging emotions. You go through this arc, right, of emotions. And when you go through this arc of emotions, when you get to the end, you access your next level. Right? So just a few days ago, I was working with a client who experienced fraud in their business, and it was a significant amount of money. And it was significant in the sense that the partner was also a very good friend, a childhood friend, as a matter of fact, best man at the wedding.
Whoa.
So this is close. Deep, yeah, yeah. Right? Deep, yeah. Right? And his wife called me saying, you know, I heard that he told you about what happened and you just listened, and can I ask you a question? I was like, sure. It's like, why didn't you throw a lifeline or show support and be there? And my response immediately, and it just came to me, was that because I know how the story ends. And if I were to come in and throw the lifeline, that would be a grave injustice to that experience that will actually forge a deeper level of resilience, and they're not going to get their full money's worth from this experience, right? And I know in the moment it's tough, right? But saving someone and throwing them a lifeline, you know, it interrupts that process.
What would throwing a lifeline have been tactically?
You know, it's okay. Starting to like be tactical. Okay, maybe now this is the next step. Do this, or you. How could you have known this anyway? You wouldn't have known this. Like that's your nature. You're a very trusting person. It's okay. These things happen. You'll make it back. You know, just trying to like appease and comfort.
Yeah, give a reason or an excuse so they can hold on to it and say that's the reason why that happened, rather than just it's happened.
It's happened.
Just let's figure
feel
out.
Feel it. Feel it.
Yeah, yeah. Feel it and figure feel out.
Feel it, own it. Because from really going through the arc or the emotions come the lessons.
Yeah. And it may be that it is because he's a trusting person, or it may be because of a mistake that the individual has made. But regardless of whatever it is, it sounds like they need to go through the experience of discovering that themselves versus using what you may have said or may have wanted to or could have said, as a lifeline, as a crutch.
Yeah, the story is never where the transformation is.
Yeah,
the lessons are never in the story. The story is just this escape hatch that we go to when it gets really difficult to be in here, right? So we use the story to reconcile, to escape the difficult emotions. And that, to me, is no different than sweeping it under the rug, right? That proverbial saying of sweeping it under the carpet, and anything that's swept under the carpet eventually rots, right? So instead of sweeping it, how can you actually go through and really understand and navigate that difficult emotion or emotions?
I think this is a perfect time to play our little game.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. So
the meaning of life.
So this is like nervous excitement when these cards come out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
So you already know that Dan and I definitely go deep into our brains to ask as insightful questions that we can ask. But sometimes we like to use some help and add some, you know, some spice, some masala into it.
Okay.
So all of these are just purely a variety of different questions. that aim to dig deeper into the lives of our guests, but also into our own lives. So this is the first time we're doing it live, actually. I'll just allow you to pick a card.
All right.
Answer the card. And then you can feel free to have either Dan and I also respond to the same question or pick a different card ourselves.
Okay.
Simple.
And feel free to read it aloud.
What would you do with unlimited funds?
Ooh, good question.
So, do I go?
Yeah, answer okay. away.
With unlimited funds, I would solve world hunger. That's the first thing I would do. What would you do, Dan?
Go a bit deeper into that.
So I grew up in Southeast Asia, and I was born in India, but I grew up in the Philippines. And poverty stares you, it just hits you in the face. Right, you come out of a five-star hotel and an opulent five-star hotel, and when you get into your car, you see children carrying younger children begging for money. And I feel in the world that we live in, with the technological advances we've made across all facets, from education to tech to health and science, no one should go hungry as a basic fundamental right should be to be able to eat. I think that's something that, you know, is fundamental. Yeah. So I would solve that problem.
Do you think that's become a bit of a North Star for you to be successful in business as well, to be able to, because you've been there.
Been where?
Grown up around, you know, seeing poverty.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, it's North Star is one way to describe it. But I think it's definitely something that I've seen, and because I've seen it firsthand, it's something that, and I have kids of my own, and I see, you know, living in the way we live, you know, and the way we travel, you know, I feel like I'm in a bubble many times, right? And I think there are millions and billions of people that live below the poverty line, and it shouldn't be that way. Yeah. What about you, Adnan? What would you do with unlimited funds?
My answer is going to be the same as yours.
Yeah.
But assuming that you get your unlimited funds and you solve the issue, the second issue that is very top of mind for me is education. Mm. I'm still wrapping my head around what a right or what an effective education means. Because while I think there have been major milestones and steps made in access to an effectiveness of education, we've not necessarily tapped in fully into using the internet as an educational tool and then allowing people to acquire the skills to know how to use it effectively, mm. right? I've personally had the privilege of having a family that was able to, you know, through the time investment, through their personal, like, investing in me, and then, of course, some sort of financial sponsorship as well, give me the privilege of going to a school and getting a great education. But I don't think everyone needs to pay an arm and a leg to get educated. So for me, it would be finding a way to make either education free or affordable to everybody, mm. and then to improve the system such that people, yes, get their basic education in the traditional way in schools, but then are equipped to use the tools at their disposal to learn and deepen their knowledge in the areas that they care about. Mm. How often has someone told you that they want to know or understand or dissect an area more to become an expert or, you know, professional in that space. And we all know that all the information's out there, the theory, the exercise and the tutorials you can use to apply that theory, and then the network you can use to connect with people that can help you use your knowledge to actually inside change in the world.
Yeah.
But most of us don't know how to use that in the most effective way. So all in all, finding the right way to make education free for everyone and then allow them the tools to use what they have there.
I really like that, because by solving that problem, you indirectly solve the hunger, the food problem, right? Because, you know, that saying or proverb, teach a man or give a man a fish and he eats for a day, but teach him how to fish and he'll be fed for life.
It's the equivalent of wishing for unlimited wishes when you're given one wish.
Yes.
Educate everyone and they will likely solve many of the other problems that are currently facing the world.
Yeah. Dan, you're going third, so you know the pressure's on you because we've covered two major areas already, but feel free to go with one or both or something completely different.
Yeah, for me, and I think this is where Adnan and I are different personalities. Adnan's very analytical, so straight away his answer is analyzing everything in the world to then condense it into a tool that everyone can use to, yeah, solve something. For me, I wouldn't know how to get the step-by-step process to make this happen, but I've got a picture of what I would imagine or hope there would be, and it's for everyone in the world, again, to have mental freedom. So we spoke earlier about people looking for financial freedom, some location freedom, others to have time freedom. But for me, I think take a second. Yeah. I think for me, mental freedom is important.
That's deep for you. Huh?
It is. And I've never...
I felt that.
I know.
I felt it.
I don't know why, but I knew I was going to get to a point today, and I can't explain why, where I'd feel how I felt just then. And I don't know if it's because I met you or just going to be, you know, I don't know if there's going to be a question that's going to come out, but I'm going to go into why. And it's, I lost a friend that I went to school with, and he took his own life. It was a tragic incident. It affected a lot of people within a community where I grew up. He was the life and soul of where we grew up. And no one would have known that he would have gone down the path that he did, where, you know, he's no longer with us. And that affected a lot of people, but in lots of positive ways. I've seen people that have been through some of the toughest struggles that you just couldn't explain to anyone. But they've just risen to a point where they've become a massive inspiration for so many people. So I do see there are these things that come out of, you know, really difficult times. But yeah, I don't like the feeling that people can feel like that, where there's nowhere else to turn other than, you know, this is it. And it could be money problems. And I think that hit me because I've grown up around family financial problems that have led to my parents, you know, separating. I think that's been an underlying thing, among other things. I've experienced money problems myself, which I've now come out of since being in Dubai. I've built the tools to, be in a position where I can help people in a lot of ways. But I think, mentally as well, just giving people the belief and the tools to be able, like Adnan said, to just transform into knowing that it's okay. Simply. So for everyone in the world to just push a button, that's all I see is a button, just to push a button that says, okay, I think I need to have this mental freedom. And whether someone just comes in and says, that's what you need, like Adnan's saying, or, you know, to be able to just have that fishing rod, or, you know, being able to teach someone to be able to fish. I think for me, it's just a button that says, yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay.
Yeah. You know, the worst kind of prison. Have you heard of this? What, you know what the worst kind of prison is? Is where you don't even see the bars.
Mm.
Right? So when you say mental freedom, it's like, you know, for a long time I felt free till I actually really understood what it meant to be free.
Yeah.
And maybe my definition is going to change. Maybe a year from now we'll be having this conversation here and I'll talk about how the year before I knew what it felt like, but I had no clue,
yeah. Right?
How deep do you want to go? But yeah, that's the worst kind of prison.
It just reminded me as well, Jay Shetty come up with a kind of story around asking, I think he asked men and women the question that there was a choice between being left with your own thoughts for a period of time, or there was another alternative, which I can't remember. But most people, electric shock, that was it.
Oh.
You can have an electric shock, or you're just left with your own thoughts for, you know, 20 minutes. Everyone chose the electric shock because they didn't want to be left with their own thoughts.
That's insane.
Wow.
What a way to end. Duran, this has been an absolute pleasure. I feel uplifted and energized by our conversation. And I feel, Dan, you feel the same.
Yeah. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for gracing your presence
here. Thank you for having me. I wish you, both of you, even more success. I think with this platform, you're making an impact through these conversations. I've listened to several of the episodes that you have up, and I've taken something from each one. And I can feel this genuine intention to help, to offer a new perspective, to educate, to inform. So keep it up, guys. And wishing you even more success.
Thank you. And lastly, where can everyone find you?
So I'm on the social channels, Dhiren Harchandani, Dhiren. I won't spell my last name. I'm sure you'll put it on the notes.
Good call.
Harchandani. In terms of my website, dhirenharchandani.com. Yeah.
Fabulous. Well, that's it from Fail Forward. Thank you, Dhiren. We'll see you soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Leave us a review. Tell us what you think. Find us at Instagram, failforward.pod. If you know someone that wants to be on the show, or if you want to be on the show, give us a shout, DM us. We'll see you soon.